Hey everyone, it's me again, your old pal James from the future. I just want to say a few words before this episode of Patron Deities. As I mentioned in the most recent episode of Monster Man, there have been some technical difficulties in recording these episodes. My old computer finally gave up the ghost. I'm going to have to get a new one. It's been several years, it's been 5 years, so that's not really a problem. It's just that I haven't really had time to actually go and buy one. And as a result, my wife has very generously lent me her computer, but it still means I'm recording in a different place and I'm recording with different equipment, and the sound quality is not as perfect as I would like it to be, so I'm sorry about that. I mean, it's never as perfect as I would like it to be, but it's not up to its usual standard, I don't think. Furthermore, that means that this episode has come in a little short, just because it's harder for me to go back and re-record bits, and there were some bits that I had to edit out. I apologize about that, and I will make it up to you with some extra content in future episodes. I hope you bear with me during this hopefully short-lived little technical problem. Thank you very much. Hello and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the 1980 Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm talking about the gods, monsters, heroes, and mythological beings that I find in it, and how to use them, and religion and mythology more generally, in your fantasy role-playing games. In this episode, we're continuing our journey through the Chinese Mythos section of Deities and Demigods, and today we're going to be talking about two deities, or like one and a half. We're going to start out by talking about Nezha, who the Deities and Demigods book helpfully informs us is the god of thieves, even though he kind of isn't. And then we're going to be talking about Shanghai Jing, who is not a deity in real life, I don't think, but we can talk about him as he appears in this book. Let's start with Nezha, though. The Nezha who appears in the Deities and Demigods book and the Nezha of Chinese mythology are pretty similar. There are one or two important differences that we'll talk about, but honestly, they mostly align, and that makes sense because Nezha is some wild fantasy RPG stuff. He is an exciting guy, festooned with magical weapons and items. He fights dragons. He's variously a troublemaking rascal or a hero of the people or both. He has some brothers who are also legendary heroes. His dad's a legendary hero and or god and, like, kind of a bully. He's got a wise old mentor who teaches him magic. He dies and comes back to life at least once. What's he got? He's got the lot. Like, he's got everything you want in a patron deity for a slightly rascally fantasy hero. And I think that is where the idea given in the Deities and Demigods book that Nezha is the god of thieves, or demigod, as they call him, of thieves, comes from. I don't think he's a patron of thieves, but you can see how he's a patron of rogues, of rascals. In reality, he is particularly popular among drivers, and that is because Nezha flies around, as I mentioned way back in the first episode of this series on Chinese mythology, on the magical wind fire wheel. So he travels around at high speed using a wheel. Truckers and cab drivers travel around at high speed using a wheel, so therefore they ask Nezha for protection. He's also a patron of gamblers for reasons that I don't necessarily quite understand. Truckers, cab drivers, gamblers, you can sort of see how if you were looking for a deity in Chinese mythology to turn into a god of thieves, these guys who work at the sort of street level would be the closest thing that you could find, right? You know, you could see that smugglers might be particularly devoted to Nezha. Or, it's a short step from gamblers to swindlers. Now, Nezha is a really adventurous character. He turns up in various pieces of Chinese literature, which concern themselves about the battles among gods and immortals. And he has a great story about his birth. His mother had a dream where a hermit appeared to her and told her to receive the child of the unicorn. She gave birth to him in the form of a ball of flesh, and his father, or perhaps not his father, who thought this was, you know, a bad thing, attacked the ball of flesh with his sword, cut it open, and out came Nezha, already, walking and talking. And he's a precocious youth. He reaches basically adulthood even when he's a young boy. And as a youth, he gets into trouble with the king of the dragons. There are a couple of different versions of this story. The one in Werner says he was washing his magic trousers in the river on a hot day,
and this like boiled the river because the magic of the trousers was so strong. I don't know about trousers. He's usually depicted with a magical red sash, so I wonder if that's not like a mistranslation or something, or just a different version of the story. Others say that he intervened to protect people from the dragon, or just to protect himself when the dragon was looking for boys and girls to gobble up. And in some versions of the story, he then kills himself in order to protect his family and his village from the dragon's wrath. Then there's a temple built to him, and there's a whole conflict with his dad about the temple, and he comes back to life, and his wise mentor gives him the wind fire wheel and a magic flaming spear. Nuzhaa is pretty impressively tooled up. I've mentioned his magic sash or trousers. He also has something called the Universe Bracelet, or in Werner's translation, the Heaven and Earth Bracelet, or the Horizon of Heaven and Earth, all of which are fantastic names. I mean, I don't think one of those is better than any of the others. He's got the Wind Fire Wheel, and while he's on the Wind Fire Wheel, he seems to be pretty unbeatable. Discussions of what he can and can't do are often couched in like, well, what'll happen if you knock him off of his Wind Fire Wheel? And at one point, someone tries to separate his two souls, the Hun and Po souls, which sort of correspond to yin and yang, or possibly not in that order. He gets asked, you know, how were you able to resist that? And he goes, oh, I just turned myself into a lotus flower, and the lotus flower has neither a Hun nor a Po, so I was fine. But of course, I mean, why didn't I think of that? And he's able to summon monsters and do all sorts of things, so he's a powerful kind of heroic deity. He's often evoked as a protective deity, and he's referred to as the Marshal of the Central Altar in Taoism. And for once, I can see why, like, there are a lot of people flying around, getting into fights with other gods, doing magical feats. I mean, we saw some of those when we talked about Lu Yue, or whatever his real name may be. We saw some other examples of this. And the same with Ma Yuan Shuai. Like, these are, in particular, Ma Yuan Shuai is only one of a large number of kind of martial protective deities. And it's not clear why he was selected for inclusion, other than maybe his magic stone. With Nuzhaa, you can see, I mean, he is a popular hero deity. In fact, there's an animated film called Nuzhaa Conquers the Dragon King. There are a number of different adaptations of Nuzhaa's story, but I'm going to see if I can find a link. I think it's originally films from 1979, and I think it's on YouTube, and I'll try and put a link to it in the show notes. I haven't watched it myself, although I will have by the time you've listened to this, and, you know, maybe we can find some additional inspiration in there. So Nuzhaa, he's a bold fellow, he takes risks, and he's not afraid to buck the system. I think this is the idea behind why he's a patron of gamblers, is that he doesn't care that much about the rules, and he's a generous, friendly person. So, you know, maybe he'll unearth a winning lottery number for you, or tilt the dice in your favor, or whatever it might be. You can definitely see how he is the sort of person that, if we take the old school view of a Dungeons & Dragons party as consisting primarily of opportunistic rascals, we can see how Nuzhaa would be a very popular deity among them. He seems like a little bit of a chancer himself, and he would be a good fit for the type of character that makes for an exciting D&D game. And better yet, he's dripping with magical items, any of which would be a great thing for either a player character or an antagonist to get hold of. The Wind Fire Wheel introduces the usual problems with mobility in games, but it's definitely something that a bad guy could float around on, soaring high over the battlefield while you try to carve your way through his legion of minions. The Flaming Spear is just a flaming spear. That's pretty terrific. And the Heaven and Earth Bracelet seems like more of a MacGuffin. You know, what do we want to retrieve? The Heaven and Earth Bracelet. Wow. I mean, I don't know what it does, but it sounds amazing. Kind of depressingly, he mostly seems to just hit people with it, which is sort of neither one way or the other. Also, in the Werner version of the story, at least, Nuzhaa beats up the Dragon King's son, cuts out his sinews, and weaves them together into a belt to give to his father to bind his armor on, and therefore is understandably distressed when he's, like, in the garden weaving this belt, and his father calls him in to scold him for having attacked one of the servants of the King of Heaven. But that's a pretty good magic item, too. It's made of the sinews of a dragon. You know, or you could have a bow strung with dragon sinew, you know, that's suitably visceral that the dragoniness of it doesn't make it corny, you know, dragon scale armor, dragon tooth dagger, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's all kind of has been done, but I don't think I've seen too many dragon sinew magical items and things. So noting that one down. So overall, Nurja is good value for money. He's also like, I think you should read some of the Nurja, or it's written, so Nurja is N-E-Z-H-A, but in Werner, in the older, I assume, Wade Giles form of romanization, it's written N-O hyphen C-H-A. And again, Werner is freely available online. Just Google up, you know, Werner, Myths and Legends of China. It's on Project Gutenberg. You can read it for free. And just go find Nurja in there, and you will find that there is some really fabulous adventure material. Because he's always getting in all kinds of scrapes, and his poor father is at his wit's end with him. A character like Nurja would also be a real pain in the neck if the PCs were the ones sort of responsible for him, because what usually happens is that Nurja gets up to some mischief, and then the aggrieved party comes to his father, because they always ask him who he is, and he always goes, oh yeah, you know, I'm Nurja, the son of Li Jing. And so they go to Li Jing, and they're like, you know what your no-good son did? And Li Jing goes, oh, okay, what can I do? So having, like, to play babysitter to some godling who just wants to go out and get in fights would be, well, that'd be a fun task for a clerics or paladins of a god, right? Like, oh, well, yes, I have sired a child upon a mortal. Or just, this child is my chosen one. I want you to just, you know, make sure he's all right. Oh, chosen one, eh? She must be a particularly holy youth. Well, no. She's got superpowers and she likes to use them. But you'll do fine. Best of luck. That'd be quite a good little clerical scenario, wouldn't it? Oh boy, it's a good thing I'm coming out of Nurja on such a feeling of kind of warmth and excitement, because this next one's about to kick me right in the shins. See, here's the thing. I'm usually okay at figuring out what the authors of Deities and Demigods were driving at. Once you've got that the main source is Werner, then the rest of it is a lot simpler. So, you know, once you know that there's no such person as Qi Jiang Fu Ya, you just have to think, well, what could that be a typo for? And you just look for Qi Jiang's and you get Qi Jiang Zu Yu. Okay, fine. You know, all you have to do is search for Ma Yuan and you'll come out with Ma Yuan Shuai. Great, no problem. Sometimes it's hard to find the connection between what Werner is talking about and the deity as presented in, you know, Chinese mythology generally. That's the case with Lu Yue. Or you can find that they've sort of warped the original presentation of the deity, as we'll see in particular next episode. But this one, I have no idea. I have no idea what it's meant to be. I really don't know. It's called Shan Hai Qing, the god of wind and sea. And what it is a bird with a person head, the oversized head of a man. And it says that he can raise up a hurricane wind and call forth any creature of the sea of non-divine nature to do his bidding. So great, he's basically a nature god, and he goes around and protects sailors and things like that. Okay, great, fine. You know, sounds like a sea god, sounds like a wind god, makes perfect sense. I cannot figure out what figure in Chinese mythology this is meant to be. Shan Hai Jing. Because Shan Hai Jing is a thing. Shan Hai Jing is the name of a book, usually translated as the classic of mountains and seas. And this is kind of like a geographical, mythological, it's got some kind of bestiary elements to it, classic of literature about, like, oh, you know, the world and all the strange things that are in it, many of them of a fabulous nature. I mean, if you were writing a monster book based on Chinese mythology and literature, you definitely not want to overlook the Shan Hai Jing. And I can't help but wonder if, you know, one of the authors just put down that name in the notes and then kind of forgot what it referred to while they were writing elsewhere in the same notes about this sea god, but I still can't figure out who the sea god is meant to be. The Shan Hai Jing is also the source of the story that I mentioned way back in the Dragon, Oriental, episode about Emperor Yu. There's a lot of stuff about Yu in the Shan Hai Jing. Anyway, so that's Shan Hai Jing. It's a book. It's not this god. So, leaving aside my inability to find any analog in actual Chinese mythology for Shan Hai Jing here, how does Shan Hai Jing do as a deity? Well, not super fantastic. I mean, he does what he says on the tin. He's a god of the wind and the sea, This is like our third, fourth wind god, but he's the god of wind and sea, right? So you can see that this is the guy who would be being prayed to by sailors. Sure. You want to go on a safe sea voyage? Shanhai Jing. You're getting attacked by something dangerous in the ocean? See if Shanhai Jing can help out. I feel like this role is more excitingly played by dragons. You're probably not going to get those oceanic element controlling and associated Chinese-style dragons into your game too often, so I feel like if you're gonna have one creature from Chinese mythology that represents the untamable, destructive power of nature, then a cool Chinese dragon is maybe a better fit than a silly-looking bird with a guy head. But maybe I'm just bitter because I can't figure out who on earth Shanhai Jing is supposed to be. As written, he's fine. He's your basic sea god that a sailor would pray to. He's fine. He's just not as good as the dragons, and if you summoned him to help you against some dragons, I would object if the dragons didn't win, because the upper illustration in particular, he looks like a buster. The bottom one's a little bit better. He just looks like a bird with a man head, and there's kind of a cool, atmospheric, oily-looking sea. I was going to see different artists, but I think they're both by Darlene, so honestly, I don't know what's going on there. Oh, well. So, Shanhai Jing is fine, but I just can't, give him any additional context, which is usually what I use to make the presentation of the deities in this section more exciting. And then, furthermore, he's kind of not as cool as Guan Di or Lei Gong or Ma Yuan Shuai or Ne Zha or any of them to start with. So, he's not my favorite. And just before we get into the next episode, we'll just knock out the spirits of the air. These are some spirits. They come from the air. There's nothing to them, really, but, handy to have there are an awful lot of cases of gods in Chinese mythology doing their fighting by summoning up, swarms of lesser spirits to go and hassle whoever it is that they want hassled. And in most sections of the Deities and Demigods book, this is accomplished by having them send out creatures from various mythologies, right? So if you're because the monster manual is already full of monsters that originate from these mythologies, but that's less true in the Chinese mythos section. So it's good that we're getting a utility monster for deities from the Chinese mythos section to summon at people. If you're trying to keep your pantheon and your game kind of Chinese themed, again, if I wanted to get there, I wouldn't start from here, but if that's what you're trying to do, then it's helpful to have this if you don't want them summoning up, demons and devils or planeters and solars or whatever it might be that is already kind of associated with a different mythology. So just kind of an aesthetically clean thing to have your various deities summoning up to duff up people who offend them. The spirits of the air are fine. There's nothing wrong with them. But speaking of things being wrong, in our next episode, we're going to talk about maybe the most, even more so than Ma Yuan Shuai, complete 180 reading of a deity from Chinese mythology. We're going to talk about Domu, who has gone from, she may be the goddess of the North Star, but a lot of the rest of this presentation is pretty weird, and we're going to talk about it next time. Together with up to two other deities, because we are getting toward the end of this section. We're going to hopefully do the last deities in the Chinese mythos section next time, and then we're going to have a wrap-up episode and some thoughts on using Chinese mythology in your game, which I think may be a little more involved and complex than using Norse mythology, because I feel like the D&D base assumptions are already a little bit closer to Norse mythology, but I could be overthinking that. Anyway, that's all going to be next time on Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.